Thanks, Tim, and thanks, Tim. Let's just pray before I start. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen. Let's just see if this works. Yes. Okay, reflections on love. What on earth is an old, single, never married, never having given birth woman doing standing in church talking about love? When Tim asked me to participate in the service, they were my thoughts, and they're perhaps yours as well. So let me first of all address the elephant in the room. You've already seen the elephant in the room, but why aren't I married? Well, there's a very long answer to that, but the short answer is God hasn't put my feet on that path. The frivolous answer is as follows, and one of my very good friends, Ross Brown, actually told me at one stage that I had the gift of irreverence. Now, I can't find that in the list, but here's an example of how it works out in practice. This is probably why I'm not married. However, I do have some things to say about love, and one of the things I would like to do is to actually set out before you my 2 Corinthians 11 credentials. Now, I don't know if you remember 2 Corinthians 11. We're currently bedded down in 1 Corinthians, but in 2 Corinthians, Paul actually addresses the issue that the Corinthians no longer trusted him and didn't really believe that he had any right to say anything. And so he begins 2 Corinthians 11 by saying, let me be a bit foolish here. And so I'm going, and then he lays out all his credentials as why they should actually listen to what he says and trust his word. So I'm going to lay down my 2 Corinthians 11 credentials. Let me give you a little bit of background about me, because some of you don't know me very well at all. So I was born in Haarlem in the Netherlands, not in New York. I'm Dutch by heritage, and I came to Australia when I was around 18 months old. We emigrated with my family. This is my family at that stage. I'm the little billiard ball in the middle. And this is my first attempt at a good passport photo. All passport photos since then have been equally as bad. However, I come from a family who came to Australia sponsored by my uncle and his wife. They were our only relatives in Australia. And we had what we could probably describe as a sandpapery relationship. I had a very loving family, a very stable family upbringing, but that relationship with my uncle and his wife was never very good. And throughout my life, there have been times when love has not been displayed, both within my family and within the slightly larger family. I have 2 older sisters and a younger brother. So I would like to dispel 2 myths. The first myth is that, I can't read it from here. I think the first one is the solitary life is a life of loneliness. And that's actually not the truth. And I hope that my example and my testimony to you today shows that that's actually not true. And the second one is that because a woman hasn't had a child, that somehow she can't experience motherhood. These are 2 myths that are within our culture. And I'm very sad to say they are embedded very strongly in our church. And when I say our church, I'm not talking about West Pennant Hills Community Church alone. I'm talking about the church community. So I ask you to think about when you are relating to single women in particular, are you actually reflecting either of those 2 myths? Because if you are, then perhaps you need to rethink about your relationship with that woman. So, going on with my credentials, what would I know about love? I've told you about my sisters and my brother. Here's a picture of them, just so that you can put them in place. Now, I don't know if you know me very well, but I'm greatly into photographs. So I'm sorry, you're going to have to sit through a number of pictures today. They're not very good. This is me, my brother John, my sister Han, my sister Wim, and my brother-in-law Steve. This is at Olivia, my niece's wedding, when she married Sam. They are serving the Lord by being trained, first of all, and they're currently having a couple of years to get together with their marriage before Sam goes into the training that Olivia has had. It's great to have nieces and nephews who are following the Lord so productively and passionately. All up, I have 16 nieces and nephews. Now, one of the things I usually say to friends is, I have no children, I'm keeping the family average down. My brother has 7, Hanukkah has 6, and Wim has 3. I've got lots of kids in my family. Sorry, I just need a drink. Now, their attempts at procreation have also been passed down to the next generation, and currently I'm up to 15 great-nieces and nephews, and my brother's children have only just started. So there's plenty more to come, I'm sure. These are some of them. I haven't got the Irish clan in there, but my brother's children, over here. Sorry, hit the wrong button. My brother's children over here on your left, and then my sister Wim's 3 sets of children, each of whom have 2 sets of kids. So one of the joys in my life is that God has placed the Loney in a family. So look around at the people within our church who may be in a similar position to me. God places them in a family, and we, the church, are their family as well. So I'm talking from a bloodline family point of view, but this has spiritual application to me as well, because not only have I been placed in a family in my with my own brothers and sisters, I've been placed in your family. So I'm your sister too. So let's go on. I was a mathematics teacher for 37 years. I'm slightly organised. I don't know if you pick up on that. It's one of my strengths and one of my failings. But you have to do the mathematics here, because if you take 37 years, 5 classes of kids with approximately 35 students per class, it's a lot of names to remember, and it's a lot of people to build into. Then on top of that, I was a year advisor for 4 year groups. Now, for those of you from private schools who don't know what a year advisor is or does, the year advisor is like a school mum. So you basically get a group of kids, 180, 280. 1 year group I had went up to about 340 kids. And you travel with them through 6 years of schooling. You become their mum. You wear the life experience that they have at school with them, and then you wave them goodbye. One of the great joys is that for many of those year groups that I've gone through, I still have relationships with those kids. They're still my kids. Here's one of my last classes of mathematics at North Sydney Girls High School, an Extension 2 group. I had the great privilege of teaching many very capable young women and many very capable young men mathematics. And if you don't like maths, don't come and talk to me about it. I've kept a book, actually 3, of all of the cards and the messages of love that my kids have given me. It's called my Warm Fuzzies book. And if I ever get down, I read through them. These kids loved me and I love them. So I might have a little bit to say about love. I hope that what you hear from me now helps you. But what do I mean when I use the word love? I use the word love in a whole lot of different ways that in my reflection over the last few weeks, I realise are probably a little bit, I don't know, incorrect. Maybe I use the word love in the wrong way. Think about the things that you love. or what you or how you use the word love to describe feelings. And I decided that perhaps I use the word love to describe a whole lot of different sorts of feelings. And when it all boiled down to it, and I come down to the fact that love describes a relationship, all of those other feelings of well-being, of fulfilment, creativity, satisfaction, challenge, achievement, all of those really come down to the bigger word of relationship, that my relationship with people offers me all of those aspects as well. And so when I experience part of those aspects in my life, I associate that with love. It's been a very interesting journey to think about the word when I'm a mathematics teacher, but about another word in just a minute. Okay, so I'm a mathematics teacher. When you teach a new concept, a really good, useful teaching tool is something called a Freya model. So I'm sorry, I'm also a maths educator, so you're going to have to get a little bit of this anyway. So a Freya model is basically to take the core word or concept that you're trying to think about and then divide it up into some different aspects. Get a definition, get some facts and characteristics, and then get some examples and non-examples. So the definition we've talked about already. And it really resonated with me when the things I'd prepared have already been said by the two Tims. So that's pretty wonderful. So we've got some definitions for love. I'll let you read them by yourself. Tim's also been going through a lot of the characteristics and the facts of love. And I particularly like this one here. I was trying to put the verbs associated with love in terms of nouns. And I found this one particularly challenging because it's the one that says that love doesn't delight in evil. And I came across a fabulous word that I want to share with you. It's an archaic word, but I think it's pretty cool, and I challenge you all to use it three times today. Okay. Epikakery is delighting in evil. I came up with the word wicked, but someone that delights in evil is displaying epikakery. Now, who knows what epikak syrup is? Nobody? Epikak syrup is what you give someone who is poisoned. You give them epikak and they throw it all up. Yes? No? So epikakery, that delight in evil, to me has a whole lot of interesting things to it. And that's what love isn't. It doesn't do that. It's not throw-upable. Okay, it's something that doesn't delight in evil. It's not wicked, but enough of that. Some examples. Love is harmless. Harmlessness is an example. When you do the best for your neighbour and no harm. Love is obedience. We're instructed to love. So if we are obedient to God, we're actually showing our love for him. And love is a choice. It's not just an emotion. It's a decision that you made. Otherwise, Jesus wouldn't have told us to love our neighbours. No, wrong one. Jesus wouldn't have told us to love our enemies. If love is a choice, we choose to love. Some non-examples in the Bible, selfishness. If we have and don't give, then we're not showing love. And the one that's probably most obvious is Peter's betrayal of Jesus. How Jesus comes to him three times. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Because three times Jesus says, I don't know him. I don't know him. I don't know him. So I've got two reflections from my own life. The first one is under the heading of love makes room for others. I love the concept that when Jesus was coming close to the end of his life, He looked at his disciples. Jesus knew he was going to die and go, and yet they didn't. And he's warning them, he's preparing them. And he says, if I go, I'm going to go and prepare room for you. And then I'm going to come back. And I'm going to take you into that room. Well, I want to give you the example of people making room for me in my life by introducing you to Wim and Steve. Wim is my second sister. Steve is her husband. And from the time when they were first friends, I was invited into their relationship. I have a very, very close relationship with the two of them. When life circumstances came about that I was no longer welcome in my father's house because he had married a woman after my mother's passing away who didn't like us and didn't like our relationship, I was placed in a very awkward place of not having anywhere to go. And my sister and her husband made room for me. I have a room in the house. It's my bedroom. I have sheets on my bed that are mine. I have a particular bed that is mine. I have a cup and a tea infuser in their house that are mine. When their kids were growing up, the holidays wouldn't start until I got there. They made room for me physically. They made room for me emotionally. Wim and Steve didn't have kids for 7 years, by choice. And then when they thought that they would start a family, they discussed that with me. We're thinking of having a baby, depending on God's plan, of course, but when our family grows, would you be the extra mother? That's incredibly precious. They made room for me emotionally. But they've made room for me in a lot of different ways. They've challenged me. They've told me when I was wrong. I don't take that very well, but they still loved me anyway. They've helped me grow spiritually. They've challenged me in my walk with the Lord. They've made room for me in many, many different ways. And they've given me their children. So these are my children and my grandchildren. Starting from the left, Mark and Amanda, Jazzy and Jay. In the middle, Kate and Michael, Job and Asher. And on the right, Liz and Paul, and Harry and Louie. At the moment, Mark and Amanda are in Newcastle, Kate and Michael in Queensland, so then I'll never get to visit them. And Liz and Paul are in Wisconsin in the US, so that's even further away. And it's been very special to be included in the Zoom family meetings when we all get together and we chat about where we're up to. But in Wim and Steve having made room for me in their family, I now have three other families who have made room for me. One of the most precious things when I last was with Kate and I left, they dropped me back at the airport. This was now more than 2 years ago. Kate messages me afterwards and said, Asher has just asked me why you can't live with us. They've made room for me as well. And because I love them dearly, you just have to look at these kids a little longer. They're very, very precious young children. In particular, I love the photo down here. It's a bit hard to see up here, so you can come and have a look at the clearer PowerPoint later. But the look on... Go back. Where are we? The look on this little one's face... Oh. Don't you love it when the technology fails? The look on this little one's face is just delightful when he knows his brother's going to school and he's just delighting in the fact that Louis is so excited. They're very dear little ones. So love makes room for others. My second example in my family's life is love is intentionally generous. Now, you've already seen this very quickly, but I'll just go through it anyway. I want to refer back and connect this story with John 3:16. That God so loved the world that he gave his only son for us, I have another verse that's also connected to this story that's going to come up in a moment. But the generosity is, it's not just being generous, it's the intention behind the generosity, that this is something that has been planned. And God planned way back when we, before the foundation of the world, he planned that he was going to actually give his son. And so my story is about a planning in my family that has been particularly moving. My niece Liz, the one who was in the field of sunflowers, who lives in Wisconsin, I only met her when she was about 6 months old. She was born when I was actually teaching in Canada. And so I came home, and this photograph is the very first photograph of our meeting. So it's a bit special. Yeah, I've got those 80 glasses on. So you can always tell how old I am in school photos by the style of glasses that I wear, but still. So Liz and I connected almost immediately, and there's been something different in our relationship that's acknowledged by the rest of the family. Liz is the one who, as she grew up, she told me she was my best buddy. And so right from the word go, I have always referred to her as, you're my best buddy. Hey, best buddy, would you do this? When I was in the US just last year, I said to her son, Louis, you're my buddy, aren't you? He said, yes, but I'm not your best buddy, because he knows that's his mum. And Liz and I, we're just, it's a special relationship. I don't love her more. I love her differently to the others because of who she is. Liz is an incredibly generous young woman. She came 6 years after Wim and Steve had their first two. So we've got Mark, 18 months later Kate, and then 6 years before Liz comes. She's the little surprise extra. When Kate was about 18, she's starting to go out with Michael, who becomes her husband. And we're sitting having a cup of tea, as we usually do in my family. And she looks at me and says, Auntie Nick, is there anything you regret about being single? Now, remember, Kate's 18, so Liz is 12. And I say to Kate, not really. I said, when I think about it, the only thing I've really missed out on is having a baby. I said, I've seen cows being born, kittens being born. I've never had the experience of birth, and I've never seen a human baby being born. I said, if anything, I'd like that at some stage. Meanwhile, Liz at 12 stores that away in her mind. When she is 28... she comes to me to tell me she's having her second baby, and she says, I want you to be at the birth. Now that's intentionally generous. Not only to give that experience that a husband and wife has at the birth of their child, to give that to somebody else, but to have planned it from when she was 12. That's pretty amazing. So, I did all the right things. I tried to get into some pre-birth classes. No, you're not having a baby. We don't want you. So I thought, okay, they're not going to let me do that to prepare in this way. So instead, I watched as many episodes of Call the Midwife as I possibly could. When it came time, Liz said to me, Auntie Nick, you know, it's getting close. Have you packed your bag? So I packed my bag for the hospital as well. And one day, I don't know if Jess remembers, I'm sitting in the McCrindle house and we're talking maths and I get the phone call. Auntie Nick, you better come. So I go, and on the 1st of June, I go. Now, I didn't think I should show you the photos of the birth, but I'm a mathematician. So it was fascinating, not just to have the experience of being with her and with Paul and to, you know, go through the whole thing of calming the mother down and doing all the things I'd never had, but to look at all of those machines and all of the tracking records, it was pretty amazing from that point of view. And then as she's getting very close to giving birth and she's crying out in agony and Paul's doing his very best to keep her down, he says to me, "Auntie Nick, go and have a good look." And so I did. And it was absolutely amazing. But what was more amazing? It's okay. I never really believed that the woman could move from that intense pain to sheer joy. And she gave me that experience. And she gave me Harry. This is after he's been washed off. I'll tell you, he was born in a punami, so it wasn't all that pleasant. But it's her planning and the joy that she has given. 6 months later, this is what Harry looked like. Now, I don't know if you can sort of think what he looks like, but we actually think he looks like this. He's very precious. So, two things about love and my experience, not my only experience, but the ones that really resonated for me, is love makes room for others. So, is there someone that you need to make room for? It may not be physical room. It might be the listening ear, the time spent, the praying for. Who needs that room? And what changes might you need to make so that you do create that room for somebody else? And the second one, love is intentionally generous. Spontaneity is great, but let's be intentional about that. So who needs your lavish love? God was intentional in sending Jesus. He lavished his love on us. Who can we lavish love on? And how can you be more intentionally generous in your life? Will I just leave them, Tim?